Welcome to Career Tours. This week, how being a control freak is ruining your career, part one. The questions this class answers are, why being a control freak is not a good thing, and how quality can be sacrificed.
Hey folks, it's Mark. I just want to remind you, if your company is hiring and you're being asked to conduct interviews, it's time to learn how to conduct interviews. And the best way to do that is to become a licensee, costs $200 a year. You get all kinds of other benefits like show notes and access to executive tools. You might as well start listening to that now. But the cool thing for learning how to become a great interviewer is our interview creation tool, which is included in your license. You go online, answer a series of questions about the job you're hiring for, and it will prepare an interview that will blow you away. And we'll give you questions and how to listen for the right answer and how to preface the interview, plenty of room to take notes, an opportunity to ask, tell me about yourself, and to do custom questions as well. It's probably one of the products I'm most proud of, and hundreds of thousands of interviews have been created with it in the last 10, 15 years. So get a license and it gets you access to the interview creation tool.
The words control freak are used to describe undesirable behaviors by some people. Some people call you a control freak and that means to them you're being too controlling, you're too tight, you're too uptight, and you're worrying about things that don't need to be worried about. But there's other people who are on the more pedantic end of the scale, if there was one, mm-hmm. who feel like being a control freak is a good thing, that there are things that you should control tightly, that there are things where quality is important or where things should be done properly. And those people take control freak to be a badge of honor, which is good. And in some places, that's a good thing, right? If you're running a nuclear power plant, I would like you to check every detail about 18 times, yeah. if possible. And then I'd like someone else to double check that, just to be safe. Right. On the other hand, in some places, the person who calls themselves a control freak or takes that end of the scale can be doing the whole project a disservice, can be doing themselves a disservice, and can be breaking relationships for things that don't actually matter. And so this guidance is a trying to help you calibrate where being a control freak is a good thing and where it's a bad thing. And when it's a bad thing, what to do instead when you have that compulsion, I don't know, that attitude, that personality that wants to be controlling. And I'll confess, I'm a control freak. So this is as much for me as everybody else.
Absolutely. I always think it's interesting because it is something that I think a lot of people, even when it's said with a loving tone, mm-hmm. right? If you think about why it's said, it's still describing behaviors that even if you wear it as a badge of honor, you know those behaviors are hurting something, mm-hmm. right? You see it as a means to an end or a good thing, but you know that there's a trade-off there.
Yes,
and so this exactly. is just exactly like Wendy said, right? Calibrating and understanding if that is the case for you, how to deal with that and how to maybe be a little bit more effective. Our outline for today is, number one, are you a control freak? Number two, increase the weight of relationships and decrease the weight of quality. Number three is the three steps to balancing the scale or recalibrating, right? And then step four is err on the side of the relationship.
Yeah, so the first question, are you a control freak? So there are some people, as we said, who name themselves control freak, and there's some people who get called control freak by other people. But in our definition, someone who controls their own work to the extent that it affects others in the organization, that's what we're talking about. So it's okay to control your own work if it doesn't bother anybody else, if it's not causing a delay for anyone else, if it's not causing arguments with anybody else, if not getting in the way of customers, or, you know, if you want to have your email with 87 labels and this like complex hierarchy, as long as you're answering your emails in 24 hours, nobody cares. That's fine. But there are behaviors that do affect others. For example, if you have 87 labels and a complex hierarchy on your email and it takes you a week to reply to any email, then you're affecting others.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be your peers, it can be bosses, it can be other colleagues, it can be customers, it can be anybody else in the organization. And usually somebody who is controlling their work to that extent is affecting more than one person. Like it's the whole of your team or the whole of the, you know, all of your peers or your peers and another group and so on and so forth.
Yeah. Now, to be fair, before we go any further, we're talking about this as a colloquial definition of a control freak. We're not making a clinical diagnosis, even though control freak it does not appear in the DSM. There are absolutely things, you know, psychological conditions, life experiences, which cause people to use some of the same behaviors that could be characterized as being a control freak. And if you feel that any of those conditions apply to you, you should see a professional, right? A clinician or a medical professional. We are not qualified to be giving medical advice in any way.
Absolutely. So being manager tools, career tools, we are behavior focused, and behavior control freak is not a behavior because you can't see it, you can't describe mm-hmm. it, and it's not the same every time, but different people have a different definition. So we're going to expand the definition to describe the behaviors that we see that might cause us to conclude that someone is a control freak. So for example, someone who rarely delegates may be a control freak.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Someone who often corrects other people's mistakes, right? Someone who sees or hears someone say something and says, oh, I think you actually mean this, right? Or it's just someone who's very persnickety about that.
And now if you're a teacher and you're correcting, you know, math, there is a right answer. So
yeah,
then correcting answers is fine. And most people who to whom this kind of label applies will exhibit more than one of these behaviors, probably mm-hmm. most of them, in more than one context. So if you only do it, if you're a teacher and you only do it when you're marking grading papers, this doesn't apply to you. But if you yeah. are sitting in a meeting and you feel the need to correct somebody else's grammar when the meaning has been clear, you may want to listen to the rest of the list. Okay. Mm-hmm. So next one, frequently defends their solution as the only viable or correct solution. Now, sometimes you're right, but if you tend to do this more often than not, and you have some of the other behaviors, we might put you in the category of control freak.
Mm-hmm. Another one is if you find yourself constantly striving to have the last word, there's a chance you might be a little bit of a control freak.
It's true. Someone who doesn't trust others to do work to their standard. Now, there's a difference between my standard and the standard. If you're running a nuclear power plant, I would like you to reach the standard. But there are other things where the standard could be relaxed. And if you can't let that go, that might be one of those things.
Yeah. I worked with a director of finance once, and she was fantastic. She was so good. But she was often perceived as a control freak. And then anytime anyone would mention something, you know, along those lines, our CFO or our senior vice president of another division would come to her defense and say, well, she's dealing with money. And if someone was handling my money, that's exactly how I would want right. them to handle it.
Exactly.
That detailed, that controlled, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And there's a big difference between making sure the ledger is correct, perfectly correct, which is what accounts should be doing, and mm-hmm. being in a brainstorming meeting and only having one solution and defending that one as the correct one. It sounds like that finance director got the money stuff right, but was also more relaxed in other areas, perhaps.
Yeah. Also, someone who is unwilling to collaborate with other people to get work done, right? And I think that kind of touches on some of the other things we've talked about, but that is when someone is, because of some of the other things we may have talked about, they don't trust people to work to their standard, or they think their solution is the only way to do it. They abstain from working with other people because they don't want something done wrong or don't want something done not up to their standard. So unwilling to collaborate with others is a big
This
one.
Is the one I have to fight in myself. This is the one where I'm like, no, it's all right. I'll just do it all.
I'll just do it because I know it'll get done. It'll
yeah,
get done
exactly.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Micromanagers in the manager tools definition of the term. So I'll give you that definition. It is the systemic and routine application of an intrusive relationship such that the manager assigns tasks, explaining what to do, how to do it, and insisting on the total process fealty, then observing the work done in real time, correcting the work as it's being done, and in the event of divergence from standard, takes over the work and does it themselves. So there's a way more precise, way further to the micromanaging end of the scale than most people would define it. But there mm-hmm. are people like that, and those people probably are control freaks.
Absolutely. People who follow their rules of delivery, even when it's been made clear that their output or behavior must change. That's a huge one.
Somebody tells you, you need to stop doing that. You need to stop doing it. Someone who rarely compromises. It's really hard to compromise if you believe that your way of doing something is the only way, the best way to mm-hmm. do something. And so you see that people just don't compromise.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you recognize any of these behaviors as ones that you engage in, and or you are a self-described control freak, you can probably justify all these behaviors. I think of high C's mm-hmm. when we use the empty disc model. Those of you that are high C's, these are probably behaviors that you more or less naturally find yourself engaging in, or you may easily engage in these behaviors to the point where maybe you overuse them to your detriment. Others don't describe you as a control freak or as a perfectionist affectionately or positively. They describe you as controlling or rigid, or when we think about, you know, not collaborating with others, you could be perceived as not being a team player. And then people don't want to work with you, which is problematic.
Yeah, because unfortunately, organizations are full of other people.
Yes, unfortunately. All the organizations that are just trees and dogs. Are...
Yeah, yeah. High quality work is only one part of effectiveness in an organization, and it's not enough. You can't just do high quality work and say, okay, that's it. The focus on quality and standards and correctness and accuracy leads you to engage in detrimental behaviors that damage relationships. And that focus on the results, that focus on exactitude is what keeps you stuck, because careers are built on two things, results and relationships. And it's not enough to have high quality output if you're destroying your relationships in the process.
Yeah. Just to say that again, careers are built on two things, results and relationships. This should not be the first time you've heard this, but if it is, that's gold, right? Careers are built on relationships and results. It's not just results.
It's just not just one or the other. Exactly. So the answer is to find a balance between the two, between results and relationships, between quality and time, between quality and cost, between quality and service, and so on. Like it's, mm-hmm. you've got to weigh up all of those things, all of those diametrically opposed things where you're always falling on one side. We've got to try and balance that up. And in times when it's possible, go for the relationship instead of the results.
And there are people who are on the other side of this equation.
Oh,
right?
For
there,
sure.
There are people who prioritize relationships and then struggle to get results or don't get results as effectively as someone who's on the other side. And so this cast is really about, if you are perceived as a control freak, either self-described or by others, you are falling on the results side mm-hmm. a little bit too much, right? You're focusing so much on the results that you're sacrificing some of your relationships potentially.
Hey folks, it's Mark. You're probably sick of me, but I want to tell you again about MT Disc. We made it simpler and smarter and cheaper. I like the cheaper part best because our old vendor is still charging, I think, $80 and MT Disc is $30. In addition, it's simpler. We took out a lot of stuff that really wasn't necessary. And it's smarter in that we focus on how you can change your behavior. Only the first third of the document is about you. The remaining two thirds is about how you can change your behavior to work with profiles that are different than you. It took us over a year and a half to compile all the pages. And it's chock-a-block full of information about how you can be more effective at work. And effectiveness leads to results, and results leads to promotions. So come to the website, check out Empty Disk. It's only $30.
So the first thing to do is increase the weight of relationships and decrease the weight of quality.
Mm-hmm. Some people just turned this off.
Yeah, right.
Some people just said, no, I'm not.
How can you sacrifice quality? Well,
yeah.
So that is the most common justification for control freak-like behaviors or any of those behaviors that we said before. You believe, and often say out loud, potentially, if you don't do it, it won't get done properly. And you believe that if you don't do it, it won't be done to your standards, which is maybe true. And you believe that if the team doesn't use your solution, the outcome will be poorer. And you believe that if you don't correct someone's minor mistake, they'll continue to make it. And when you ask yourself what matters, the answer is always quality, right? You are striving for perfection. We're going to give you some examples. Quality isn't always the only outcome that's required. It's not even the most important outcome sometimes. There are other things that matter, some of which are your relationships.
Absolutely. There's another area of organizational effectiveness which balances two opposing forces. Managers have to balance results and retention. Since it's easier to see others' faults than our own, let's look at what happens when managers don't balance these two competing drivers. Those managers have to balance results, the team accomplishing their goals, and retention, the team members remaining with the team over time. Retention had to be added because the first managers, and this is way back during the Industrial Revolution, focused only on results. And we've all heard those stories about people dying in factories because the only thing that mattered was results. Managers were literally working people to death. Nowadays, at least in the developed world, people don't die at work because they're being overworked. We see something else in the teams of managers focused only on results. They can't keep their people. Their directs, overworked and feeling underappreciated because their managers are only focused on results, they look for a new job. Sometimes this happens internally within the organization, right? Depending on your organization, they could have opportunities. Or they look externally. And success for a manager means balancing results and retaining their people. So that might mean, for example, that sometimes you have to extend the timeline for a project so that each of the team members can actually take some time off. Right? Get that, some of that decompression time. Take that that dreaded word, vacation, right? I mean, so we have to sometimes sacrifice as managers a tiny bit of the results in order to retain people. We have to constantly kind of know where we're at and make that balance.
I was reading yesterday some information about Agile and Scrum, and there's now I can't remember what those, I think there's the Scrum manager and the project manager. I think
Scrum Master.
The Scrum Master. Yeah, those are the two terms. And the project manager's job is to interface with the business and find out what they want and all of those things. And the Scrum Master's job is to protect their team. In other words, they're the person who goes back and says, you can't have that quickly. Yeah, or
right.
We can only do 40 hours a week, or all of the other things that IT managers used to say. And my instant reaction to that was, why should they be protected? Like, that's just silly. Like, if the customer wants it, the customer should get it, right? But is a reaction, I think, to this kind of thing where IT teams feel like they were driven into the ground by just having this endless list of customer demands and this endless list of requirements that were always changing. And they put, in my opinion, with my limited amount of reading, Scrum Masters in there just to put a buffer between them. And it's kind of the modern day equivalent of this Industrial Revolution thing.
I completely agree. And again, in my opinion, I think that's part of the reason why so many organizations have gone to a more hybrid, or not hybrid, more matrix environment, mm-hmm. right? Where, so you've got two bosses, more or less. You've got a boss that is in charge of your work or is managing the projects that you're working on. And then you've got another boss who is managing your growth, your development, your morale, like all of that stuff. And I'm going to say something. I think that's because managers, at least a lot of managers, aren't doing that balancing act mm-hmm. very well.
Yeah. It's like outsourcing the conflict. You know, the conflict yeah, exactly. between the project manager wants me to do all of this work and I can't do that and learn something new. And my functional manager is focused on my growth and so on. So they can have that argument and I don't need to be part of it.
Right. Maybe I should be part of talking about my work and my growth.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe, yeah. but that scenario probably makes sense to you if you think about your manager having to balance the demands of all of the work versus, you know, keeping you on board because they're not killing you. If your manager was acting like he was building the pyramids in Egypt and, you know, flogging you to death, you would probably leave his team, right? That scenario makes sense. Now, the managers are competing those two competing forces. They're balancing two competing forces, the work that needs to be done and the ability of their team to do it and stay healthy. In the same way, you are balancing results and relationships. So you are balancing the quality, the standards, the control freak is, you know, the control of your work versus mm-hmm. the value of the relationships that you have. Now you can start to see that, yes, it's difficult, but it's doable, probably. If your manager is managing that, then that's a good thing. If their manager is not, then you're getting an example of what other people might be seeing.
Well, I think, and again, I said that earlier, tongue in cheek, but I think most people who are listening to this probably understand this, but that's the first step. Understanding and knowing that there is this balancing act, whether you, I mean, some people may say, no, there's other things. Yeah, but if you understand that concept exists, it's there, that's the first step. You can at least understand that, yeah, sometimes I'm going to have to maybe push a little bit harder for quality, understanding that that comes with a trade-off, right? Mm-hmm. And that sometimes it makes sense to say, you know what, all the water's going to end up in the ocean.
Yeah.
I'm going to just understand that I'm not going to, you know, poke the bear this time.
And if you have been called a control freak or people have used similar terms, your balance is probably way off. People can tolerate a little bit of off or a little bit of the balance being off. You know, not everybody is perfectly centered all of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But if you are getting told these things, you are probably way off. And that is what is ruining your career.
Yeah, it means your relationships are suffering to some extent in some areas. So the idea that we would, you know, reduce quality is probably, you know, like we've talked about, it's probably, to some of you, you're saying, well, that's
no
crazy.
No way. Right? No, why would anybody do that ever?
Why would we reduce quality? The whole point is quality, right? That's what a lot of folks hearing this would say. You know, when you load the dishwasher at night and you throw in one of those tablets, you know that in the morning, some of the dishes won't be perfectly clean. They don't come out like they do in the advertisements, you know, blindingly hygienic, right? Making that sparkle and the, yeah, exactly. They probably could if the dishwasher manufacturers had prioritized quality at every step. And if the tablet manufacturers only used quality as a measure during production. But if the dishwasher and dishwasher tablet manufacturer had done so, your dishwasher would cost thousands of dollars. Each tablet would cost $100 for a pack instead of 10. And when you buy the dishwasher and the tablets, you know you're sacrificing some quality in order to be able to afford to buy them at all, right?
There's a balance between quality and price and quality and availability and quality and time and quality and relationships. Everybody is balancing quality and against something else all the time. Even you are balancing quality in relationships. You're just coming down 100% on, or 90% on the side of quality. And the people that are having successful careers are balancing it differently. They are much more 50-50. They give up quality in some places to give to the relationships.
Absolutely. That dishwasher example is, I think, so poignant because...
Because you just did the dishes?
Oh, yeah, I wish. But the other thing about the dishwasher is maybe it could get all the dishes perfectly clean, but every cycle would take 24 hours to run.
That too.
And then guess what? People get in the house, go, I would like to have a drink, but all the cups are in the dishwasher for the next day and a half. So, you know, then we're sacrificing, right? There's always a sacrifice. There's always that balancing act.
And to complicate things, it's not a single measure. It's not, we can't say to you 50-50, split it down the middle every single time you'll get it right. Because sometimes the balance should be on quality and sometimes it should be on relationships. And we don't judge our relationships on a single instance. We judge it over time. Like when you join a new team, you've been in a relationship. So I think you've been here, Andrew's been here 15 months, 16 months, maybe?
Yeah, something like
something
that.
Something like that?
Close to 18 months, actually.
Oh, there you go. 18 months worth of interactions with Andrew. And my relationship with him, or my perspective of my number that I would give him, is based on all of those interactions. Now, the most recent interactions, I will rate more heavily because recency effect, and I have a short-term memory. So what he's done for me or what he's done against me in the last week is 2 weeks is probably what I think of most. But still, I have a whole 18 months worth of history of interactions with him. And if he had always said to me, no, Wendy, we can't record yet because I haven't read the show notes properly. Or, no, Wendy, I'm not ready. Or, no, I can't help you out with that thing because I'm doing this and it's really important. Or, no, I can't stay late because it's 5 o'clock and I always leave at 5 or whatever. Mm-hmm. I would have said my relationship with him is really poor because every single time he's weighed quality or something else above my relationship. He's never helped me out. He's never made it easy for me to work with him. He's never, I don't know, supported me in a meeting, whatever. Mm-hmm. I would say we had a really poor relationship. Mm-hmm. And that's when people say, I don't like working with that person because they make it hard for me or they value other things.
Yeah.
And other people are doing it differently. So somebody else joins the team and there's 4 interactions in the first week. And the first one is 100% on relationship, right? They just let the quality go. They just say, hey, it's fine. If you want to do it that way, I'll absolutely support you. It's neither one way or the other. The next time it's 50-50 and they say, yes, you can send that email, but would you just tweak these 2 things? Because I think those things won't come across quite right, right? That's kind of 50-50. Mm-hmm. The next one is 100% on quality, where they say, look, there's only one way to do this in the system. That will mean that we understand what happens in 6 months' time. So please do it this way, right? This is the only way to do it. The next time they might say it's 75% relationship and 25% quality. So they might say, oh, you know that document? Do you think you could just rename it? Because if it begins with the project number, it's way easier for us to find it later, right? We're not coming down on quality or relationship 100%. We're just kind of, well, apart from the one that was 100% quality. But, you know, over time, the interactions are 50-50, right? It's about being able to judge when is a good time and when is a good time for only relationship and when's a good time for only quality and when can you be somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, and having, I think, just in general, not keeping a tally somewhere. Mm-hmm. Don't keep a spreadsheet, right?
Well, if you want to keep a spreadsheet, go for
it. You can, yeah.
As long as it gets to get in the way of everything else, right?
Right, but having an idea of your relationships and how focused you've been on quality and how focused you've been on the relationship, because certainly with some people, you are probably going to be more quality focused than others, depending on the situation and depending on that. But what we're talking about is for you folks that err on the side of quality, right? You are much more focused on the side of quality in most of your relationships. So just having that idea in the back of your mind of, you know, how have my interactions with this person tended to have gone?
And the good news about that is you don't have to give up the quality piece where it matters. You don't have to give up being right or being correct or things being perfect when it matters. We're asking you to give it up when it doesn't matter as much.
Right, exactly.
So we'll leave you to stew on that and think about your interactions over the next week. And then next week when we come back, we're going to talk about how you think about specific instances and how you can balance the scale in those instances. Thanks, Andrew.
Thanks, Wendy. Bye, everyone.